make use of the information as a secondary manner. There is also the theory of formal discipline, which is based on the supposition that subjects may be legitimately taught for mental training resulting from their study and not for the essential value of the knowledge acquired. My concept of education for Cal Poly has always been to create experience for students whereby they become better able to adjust themselves to the demands of that particular form of society in which they are to live and to work. To accomplish this concept, we must organize our curricula to meet the needs of the individual. Subject matter must be taught because of its inherent value and not just for the purpose of discipline. Facts as such are of little value if they are not applicable to life and to the student's continuous growth. In our programs, we always have before us the individual's preparation to live and make a living. Besides the learner, we must have the medium of instruction, the teacher. Besides the learner, the teacher gains his objectives through creating new experiences. The sum total of all this, the learner, the teacher, and the creation of these experiences is teaching. To be a good teacher, one must guide, enliven, and motivate students in their thinking and doing in order to gain the teaching objectives. Just plain teaching, according to those or other principles or similar principles, is not enough. We must take an interest in the individual student. We must counsel with him, help him. We must gain his confidence. We must show him how to apply his knowledge. We must participate in his activities. In other words, the Cal Poly philosophy calls for a close student-teacher relationship. Our practice and reputation in this regard is what built our program to what it is today. A lot of these attributes of our instruction show up in our students and in our graduates. We must continue to strengthen this emphasis. We are fortunate here in the United States that public education is available to practically everyone and not just a selected few. This is not true in throughout the world. I was both astonished and somewhat frightened by the enormous task which most countries have in eliminating illiteracy and educating their people. In most of our states, compulsory education reaches nearly everyone under 18 years of age or at the completion of 12 grades, including high school. It is estimated that about 90% of all of our young people attend high school. And some recent statistics would indicate that almost 50% of those who complete high school receive college education. And this percentage is increasing each year. It is hard to say how far these figures will increase in the future. But because of our increased population and the greater need for more education due to our ever-increasing amount of knowledge and our advancing technology, everyone's predictions are that college students will increase in number at a tremendous rate. With these increases come some difficult problems. In T.R. McConnell's book, A General Pattern for American Public Higher Education, he says that American colleges and universities have been warned for some time to get ready for this rising tide of students, and now it appears that these institutions will be inundated. He also says that historically, the colleges and universities of this country, both public and private, have developed independently and autonomously. They are highly decentralized and uncoordinated. That instead of an American system of higher education, we have no system at all, since there is no common pattern of curriculum, instructional methods, or organization among our 1,300 colleges and universities in this country. However, we know that in California, with the establishment of the Master Plan for Higher Education, which became a law under the Donahue Act, we are getting a pattern established. We now have a differentiation of function defined between the state colleges, junior colleges, and the university as presented in the Master Plan. We also have the Coordinating Council to watch over these three areas of higher education to see that they fulfill their assigned responsibilities and obligations. At Cal Poly, we were worried that because of California's new system of higher education under the Donahue Act, a pattern of uniformity in curriculum and program would prevail, especially in the state colleges. This, we felt, would be brought about because of the competition for the tax dollar between the various areas of higher education and between the colleges within the state college system itself, as well as by the increased cost per student for higher education, both in facilities and support, and the reluctance on the part of the public to pay additional taxes. We were also concerned that the state would have to continue to make the admission requirements more stringent and use other means of limiting the number of students. We were concerned about this because it might limit the type of student that could benefit from the type of education offered at Cal Poly. Cal Poly's program, because of its practical application and need for expensive laboratories and equipment and outdoor facilities, and also because of the resulting small classes in some areas, naturally costs more and therefore would be vulnerable when we compared on costs alone with other state colleges and other types of higher education. So far, because of the reputation we have on good teaching methods and the success of our graduates, our initial fears have proven to be unnecessary. We have been successful in maintaining our objectives. I am confident that we will continue to succeed as long as we do an excellent job. We must keep in mind constantly that by law, we have a responsibility to carry out a special emphasis as a polytechnic college within the state college system. This emphasis was restated by a resolution of the State Board of Trustees in April 1961, and it was again stated in a letter from Chancellor Dumke to me dated April 24, 1963, when he set forth the following guidelines for Cal Poly to follow. First, Cal Poly will continue to operate as a state college with a special polytechnic function. Second, as an institution with a technological occupational history and a special polytechnic function within the state college system, Cal Poly will emphasize the applied fields of agriculture, engineering, business and home economics, together with the closely related supporting fields of physical sciences, natural sciences, and mathematics. In achieving and maintaining this special polytechnic emphasis, Cal Poly will not be required to offer all the majors in the basic complement of liberal arts offerings as listed in the state California state colleges under the master curricula plan. Three, in fulfilling its recognized role as a polytechnic institution and in maintaining the special emphasis authorized by Education Code Section 24751, the college will apply the definition and measurement of emphasis to the end that a substantial majority of all the FTE taught will be in applied sciences, applied fields of agriculture, engineering, business, home economics, and their necessary closely related supporting fields of physical sciences, natural sciences, and mathematics. And fourth, as a polytechnic college emphasizing occupational excellence in applied fields, Cal Poly will concentrate primarily on instruction at the undergraduate level. I mentioned before that constant planning has borne fruit for us. You are all aware that we have been working diligently on long-range educational planning for Cal Poly based on the legislative and administrative directive that we have received as outlined above. You'll receive soon the latest report on this long-range educational plan. In spite of statements that have been made in T.R. McConnell's book, we are developing in California a definite pattern for higher education, and from all indications, a flexible pattern. And Cal Poly not only has a pattern, but it has a definite objectives for the years ahead. Without this pattern, without this plan, we could never continue to hold our place as an outstanding institution of higher education and carry out the responsibilities that have been given to us. With a spirit of dedication and enthusiasm for our program, by excellent teaching methods, by working closely with the students, and by everyone cooperating, we cannot help but succeed in the future as we have in the past. The chancellor and at least two vice chancellors and several of the trustees have personally come to me and told me that Cal Poly has an outstanding program, that we know where we are going, and where we are going probably is better than anyone else in the whole state college system. This has been brought about by the spirit shown by our people on each of our campuses when visited by the chancellor or the trustees or by the chancellor's staff or any of our people here, and also by the success of our graduates. There has not been one request that we have made to the Chancellor's office or the trustees in which we have not been supported. It is important that we continue to work in this direction with our long-range educational planning, and it all goes back and evolves around and is summed up with a theme for our fall staff conference on each of our campuses, and that is effective teaching. Now, I've talked about our successes and our acceptances of our program by the Chancellor's Office and the trustees. I would not want to lull you into thinking that we don't have problems. We do have problems. One of the problems that we have to watch carefully is that our course per student does not go up completely out of proportion to that of the other state colleges and other phases of education. This conservatism is difficult because of our type of program. However, we can watch proliferation of courses. The other day, one of the trustees in the San Francisco meeting said that when you add a course, you should drop a course. Now, he wasn't talking about Cal Poly, he was talking about all the colleges. We can watch our size of classes. We can watch our maintenance and other costs. And of course, the old question of our salary savings, we have to be careful there too. I made a very, very definite complaint to the Chancellor's Office, to the trustees, to the Department of Finance, that we were getting hurt more than any other college on our salary savings. I know that that everybody's working on it, but it's just unfair. But we have to live with it. They give the idea is to put in the budget we have so much money for so many people, and then they take away the people and the money after it gets published. And that's the problem we have. In other words, you have to turn back 5% of all the money they appropriate for us, and that's a tough one. It's Indian givers, is that what you call them? Nevertheless, we are in competition with other colleges for the tax dollar, and while we know our program is an expensive one, we must always be cognizant of the cost. And that's a problem, and we're facing this all the time. And another one is, as we get larger, it is more difficult to keep close family relationship that we've always had. We're getting so large, we get not to know one another. We get to forget, and we can't work in the same spirit of cooperation when we get so big. We've got to keep in mind how we can overcome that problem. It's easy to drift into another type of program if we don't keep in mind our basic objectives in developing our curriculum and our catalog and our policies and our programs. As we are confronted with increased enrollments and increased demands on our time and energies, sometimes we might forget the direction in which we're supposed to go. And then another one which is important, and I've been concerned about it because some letters have been coming to me. With the reputation we have and the attention and requests we are receiving from outside agencies and for special programs, we must see that we do not extend ourselves beyond our ability to do a good job and with our regular program as well as those special programs. Now, how far can we go with Lusakas and Argentines? And we just have to watch that very carefully to be sure that our program here is just right. Of course, when you get larger, you can do more of that because you have more people that you can use. Now, the other one has to do with public relations, and that is to keep our public relations good at all times. Sometimes we can make a mistake and get bad publicity, and a lot of the hard work that we've put in over the years can be wiped out in a very short time. And don't think with our size, with our reputation, that the newspapers and the radios don't like to pick up anything that they can criticize you for. So we've got to be extra careful in that. Now, in connection with the passing of the Donahoe Act, I said that we had some fears relative to the acceptance of our program. Up to this last year, while our new administration with the Chancellor and the trustees got underway, I admit I also had misgivings about how Cal Poly would fit into the state college system under the new administration. I've talked to you many times about it. Very soon after the transfer from the State Board of Education to the State Board of Trustees, we were threatened with the abolishment of our Enabling Act. Also with the loss of one of our campuses. They're just going to take it away from one of our campuses away from us. We're also confronted with drastic changes in administrative responsibilities at both the state and the local level. I was even fearful that the recognition and acceptance we had obtained for our occupational instructor classification, which is so essential to our program, would be taken away from us. Well, I'm happy to say now that within the last 6 or 8 months, practically all of these fears have been dispelled, and I feel now that we are stronger with our Cal Poly program than we ever have been. Of course, we have problems that will arise from time to time, but by explaining and working with those concerned, I think all these problems should be solved. I don't think we're going to have any more problems with the trustees and the chancellor's office because we've had such success with them and we've had a good public relations program with them. It is natural after the trustees become more cognizant of the local and state problems that they'll have a better understanding of what we're trying to do and what the state colleges are trying to do, and they'll work with us on the solution of the problem. And of course, we must remember that trustees have some difficult problems facing them. Probably among the most crucial is the increasing demand upon the tax dollar in the state and the continual rising costs in operating the state colleges. At their meeting on the 5th and 6th of September, a tentative proposed budget of $121 million for the 1964-65 year for all the state colleges presented to them. And then they wondered where they're going to get this money, with everybody promising there'll be no more increase in taxes, and also that our money that they've set aside under Amendment 3, or 1A, I guess it is all gone for all these new colleges. And because of this problem, they are seeking ways to reduce the costs. And here's some of the things they discussed. They said that probably they could reduce the cost by increasing the fees to students, raising them from 79, whatever it is now, up to 105, and then on up. And of course, you don't have a public set of a state college system any longer. Increasing the teaching load. Our chancellor said there's been 3 trustees that want to take our 12-unit teaching load now and raise it to 15. I don't know, he's fighting it, and I don't think all the trustees feel that way. Another one is extending the college year to a year-round program. I don't know how that'll work, but some of them are working on it. San Bernardino's trying to get into a program like that. Increasing the class size. And of course, cutting out certain types of questionable programs in the very classes. And of course, proliferation of courses is one thing they keep repeating. Now they're asking, and I think they mean it, they're going to ask the faculties and they're going to ask the all of us to help try to solve these problems. And they are problems because we have 17 or 18 campuses in the state already, and there's probably demands for more, and it's going to be that problem ahead of us. Now, in the administration of the state colleges and the responsibilities of the trustees are not light ones to carry. But over the last few months, their attitude and concepts of administration seem to be ones of cooperation, consultation, and placing more responsibility at the local level. They've made tremendous progress, I feel. I think in their approach to these matters are very, very fine. I think Mr. Luckman, the new chairman of the board, and Mr. Harbin, who just left that office and who is now chairman of the Trustees Educational Policy Committee, both have made statements emphasizing that they expect the chancellor and the presidents to consult with their faculties and staff, but that the final decision at the individual college is up to the person to whom they have given the responsibility and to whom they have delegated authority. The day I left on my trip, we had a meeting we were to have the meeting of the state college presidents on this campus, and I got a call a day or two before from the chancellor saying that to take a rain check to have that meeting of the presidents on this campus, that Mr. Luckman wanted to talk to the presidents, and he did talk to us on the 25th of July in the chancellor's office. He wanted to tell us of his cooperation and all these programs. But among other things, he says he reemphasized that the presidents, after consultation and weighing of issues involved, are expected to reach decisions which they think are right, whether it's in curricular, personnel, organization, or whatever, regardless of any other consideration. In other words, they want the person responsible to do what he thinks is correct. And then the trustees, he said, are going to hold the chancellor responsible for carrying out the policies which they set after consultation with faculties and the statewide academic senate. And then they expect us to do the same thing in dealing with our local people. In other words, the department heads need to consult with their people, but they are to make the decisions. And the same thing is true with the division heads, the deans of the college, and the vice presidents. In other words, this whole program is that the person responsible takes the responsibility, but he's to consult everywhere possible to get the help and cooperation of everybody, but they have to hold some one person responsible for the final decision that's made at any level from the chancellor on down. The trustees are also going to take a rather firm stand on the matter of promotions and tenure. That question has come up. They feel that there's been a tendency for too many people in most of the colleges to be promoted to top ranks that were not outstanding teachers. They feel that there ought to be some high standards in that promotional program, and they're going to analyze it. Another thing is they feel that there's been people given tenure in some of the state colleges that should never have been given tenure. They expect the faculties to work closely with the administration and the chancellor's office in developing procedures and regulations which will ensure that we are getting and keeping the very best possible people to do this teaching job. This includes the initial recruiting of faculty members as well as the retention and promotion of these people. And then our responsibilities on this are twofold. First, to make sure that we get the very best possible people to fulfill our specialized function here at Cal Poly. And second, to make sure that the procedures and regulations we establish will help us retain these functions. That means to give every possible help and consideration to upgrading and working and giving tenure and giving promotions to those people who want to make the outstanding contributions to the college. Now, we have some personnel problems at the college. I don't like to mention them, but we've had them during the last year or more. I'm very fortunate it's only with a very, very, very few individuals. But we've had them who have not agreed with our program and have seen fit to go out and try to undermine some of the things that Cal Poly's trying to accomplish. Another thing that's bothered me, for some reason or another, in the last few months, I've had more students come in with complaints. Now, I don't pay any attention to complaints. I always pass them on, especially when it's about a grade. I haven't done anything about complaints about grades. You're going to get them. But one thing I don't like to have a student say that he had an appointment with a teacher and the teacher didn't keep it, and they complain about it. And that happened at least three cases that I know about, and I don't like it, and I don't think it's good for the morale of our students. But it hasn't been general. It's just been three cases, as I say. Then another thing that I've had several letters from people from the outside, parents. I don't pay any attention too much to it, but I have to answer them. And they've been getting quite a number of them. I got two this last week about individual instructors, something they've done somewhere that isn't like. I try to get you people know who they are because I've always go right back to where they come from. But some of them may be questionable as to our reputation. I mean, some of the things that we do. So we got to watch that because one thing can do damage. There's always a threat to these letters. So I have to keep that person from keep carrying out a threat by publishing this in the paper or whatever he happens to do. But if we're careful, we can do it. I'm not going to mention them. You all know what they are because you people concerned have been made knowledge of these letters. All but the last two, I didn't have time to say anything about them yet, but we'll know about them. But we just have to watch our good reputation and the criticism we get. Now, a lot of the criticism doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's something that probably gets a basis of the fact that the student doesn't like the particular way the teacher combs his hair or something, I don't know. We don't, but let's watch that and keep it down to a very minimum, because I have to answer those letters, and sometimes it gets a little difficult to keep them happy and keep the teacher happy and keep the department happy and keep Cal Poly. So I hope I don't get any more. Now, like most colleges, we've had some grievances that have gone to the chancellor because we couldn't resolve them locally. And not many, only about three, but fortunately the chancellor has backed us up, but the thing that bothers me there is it takes hours and hours and hours of committees and administration and so forth, just because some person keeps on going and going and going, and let's figure out among ourselves how we can resolve to get these problems so we won't have to spend so much time on things of that kind or spend more time on our teaching responsibilities. As I say, there's not more than five or six on both campuses altogether that there are any difficulty around. But I just want to call your attention that we do have problems of that kind. And I want you people, especially your councils, your faculty councils and staff councils on each of the campuses to assist us as much as we possibly can in those kinds of problems. We are continually studying our procedures and administrative organizations and functions right along with our long-range planning and curricula. We're always seeking to improve our program wherever we possibly can. As in decisions to add new curricula, update a program, add a course or drop a course to keep up with the demands of the time, it is necessary from time to time, as the occasion arises, to make changes in regulations, procedures, or administration in order to accomplish the goals of the college. I just want to work as closely as I possibly can with the faculty staff council on this campus and the faculty staff councils on our campus down at Kellogg's. We seek and need your help, and I assure you that we'll do all in our power to keep your officers informed and consult with them in every possible way. Now let me close by saying that I'm extremely pleased with the progress and work of our San Luis Obispo Campus Faculty Staff Council and the Kellogg Campus Faculty and Staff Councils. Leadership in these groups at the both campuses have been excellent, and effective programs are evolving from them. However, all of us must show patience and as we grow and work together if significant achievements are to be derived. We need to continue the close relationship which developed during the initial year of their operations. There are many problems which we need to tackle together with an understanding, and we need a lot of study to get them underway. My only word of caution is that we not bog ourselves down with trivia and unimportant items. Let's concentrate on the big problems that we face and work together in seeking the answers. Our fall staff conference is devoted to teaching. We have problems to solve, and our work is set before us. And during the year, there is a tremendous task ahead for the new and the old, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, President McPhee. The second session of this general conference takes up here at 1:45 this afternoon with a presentation by the Vice President and by Ken Kitch. See you at 1:45.